While the economy might be scary, the future is actually bright due to the many breakthrough clean technologies now emerging. Why be blue when you can be green? You'll definitely want to read the new book that just came out, Breakthrough Power. Go to their website, breakthroughpower.net. You'll also want to bookmark freeenergynews.com, which takes you to the premier news and directory site, peswiki.com, the Wikipedia of breakthrough energy. That's freeenergynews.com.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to AIR. I'm Jennifer Hellman, your host, as well as intuitive life coach, healer, and writer. Tonight's guest, one of those that I can't even tell you how I was guided to him, but it's a real honor that I have been. Jonathan Ellerbe, Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe, has spent 20 years dedicated to the personal, professional, and academic, exploration of spirituality, healing, and consciousness. Throughout his journey, he has traveled the world to meet and study the spiritual teachers of more than 40 culture traditions. He is an amazing man, and tonight we are honored to have him on the first day of the official launch of his beautiful book, which is Return of the Sacred, Ancient Pathways of a Spiritual Awakening. And I thank you very much. Is it Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe? What should I be calling you tonight?
Oh, just call me Jonathan. Totally fine.
And I do want to tell you, the audience, that there is a link to get his book on BBS Radio, but you can also go to his website, which is returntothesacred.com.
There you go.
Well, Jonathan, tonight has been exciting. You were just telling me the exciting news of what a great response you got in your hometown.
Yeah. Well, the news for me is that I decided to come back to Canada, to where I was born and raised, to do an official release of the book. It's actually been out for a couple weeks now. And I was just very, very fortunate to find that the city that I am from came out in droves. There were literally hundreds of people congesting the bookstore, and they sold out of all the books, and I've been very blessed to have been in the paper and on the television a couple of times. So, yeah, it's a very fortunate start, and certainly my main hope is just to help people and hopefully share a good message.
Well, it's a wonderful book. I've been looking through it. It is an incredible book. And why don't we go, what is this book about, and what was the journey like to even write this very insightful book?
Well, there's two questions there. So the first one was about the journey of writing it, and I have to say that I am told by others that it was kind of an unusual journey, because I was very fortunate, you might say guided or blessed, that I had a dream that I would publish with Hay House, which is a very big publisher in this field, and I felt called to go. I'd finished my PhD, and a couple months later, I noticed there was a Hay House conference. I felt called to go, and by an extraordinary set of circumstances, kind of a longer story really, I met the president, and by the end of the weekend, I had essentially a verbal agreement on a book deal, and I just, by divine intervention, happened to also have met the man who became my agent. And it was only 1 year later, from May until May, I submitted the book for final edits and to send off to the printer. So it was a very smooth process in some ways, because it happened in about a year. The book kind of wrote itself in many ways. I did my best to write it from a place of inspiration and intuition rather than trying to make it happen. And at the same time, I can't lie and say that it was easy, in the sense that I had a full-time job, a wife who was pregnant. We moved into a new home. So it was done in evenings and on weekends. But it was a blessing. It was a great journey.
Now, the conference that you went to, was that in Vegas?
It was. It was actually one of the Hay House I Can Do It conferences.
I have a feeling I met you there.
No kidding. I wouldn't be surprised.
Because it's like, I'm looking at your photo on your beautiful web. You do a wonderful job with your website.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going, God, I know him. I don't know why. And then when you said that, it's like, duh, that's where I've seen him.
Well, it's funny. I have to tell you, I attended a couple of the group sessions that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And in two of the sessions, I had to do partner exercises. The two people I partnered with, one, I stayed in touch from that time until today, and she's going to be helping a little bit with my Miami release. The other woman came to my book signing tonight.
Oh,
and then here I am on the phone with you. You know, it's amazing how the world delivers these synchronicities. And I think, in part, it shows when we are connecting with our true self, there's an alignment that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I also think it's sort of like just a little encouragement, you might say, from the other side to say, all right, still getting green lights, keep going.
Yes. Yes, and that's when you really know you're in your alignment, because those green lights keep coming up.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, for people who are listening, I mean, this is like a really exciting time for me, and we're talking about all green lights. And I've come to learn that the red lights are just as important. In fact, I probably have learned more from my red lights than my green lights, if you know what I mean, when things
yes.
don't go my way, or I feel stuck, or it's not what I thought it would be. And I think that when we make the commitment to learn from every red light we get, instead of going into judgment, you know, we actually are tilling the soil, or you might say, you know, refining ourselves, so that we can move into that stream of I guess what we're calling the green lights.
Right. Now, do you think those red lights kind of helped you write your book at all?
Writing the book in the... Well,
I mean, do you have a learning process by finding the different ways of the sacred?
Well, so maybe what we should talk a little bit about is what the book's about, because
yes.
that definitely does connect with your question. so the book is really about... I guess there's a few core concepts. One is that spirituality is common to every human being. In other words, it's a part of being human. Two is that spirituality is an experience, meaning it's not something that someone can tell us or something we can simply think about and understand. It's a lived, emotional, physical, intellectual, soulful process that we need to consciously engage or intentionally become self-aware of to make the most of. And what helps us to have spiritual experience the most is a regular practice of some kind. And so the centerpiece of the book is talking about essentially how do you pick the right practice for you. And I talk about 12 master paths, 12 spiritual practices that have shown up in all of our cultures around the world and throughout time. And they are such that a person can find what suits them best. Whether they're more physically oriented, they like movement and
mm-hmm.
yoga. Whether they're more conceptually oriented, they like studying and sacred texts. You know, whether they're more emotionally oriented, like they're into devotional practices or service, or maybe whether they're very focused on purely the spiritual. So maybe they're interested in renunciation or working with people in the face of death and dying and that process. The idea essentially is that there's something for everyone, and these are paths that have helped millions of people. These are the paths of our great masters and our mystics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about finding what works for you and committing to it, regardless of what your tradition, because these paths exist in all of our traditions. So to bring it around to the question about the red lights and the green lights, I do think that finding a practice that works, that helps you to mature, that helps you connect with the sense of the sacred, both in yourself and in the world, is definitely almost always going to start off with a little, you know, red light, green light.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to say, try meditation. Maybe that's something their friends have tried. And they go and it's not for them. Or maybe they're in church and they've been involved in a prayer group, but they don't feel connected. And then it's time to move on and try something else, but it, you know, doesn't necessarily mean they leave their church. Maybe they become involved in community outreach or join the choir. But the beautiful thing about spiritual practice is you don't need to intellectually ask what's the best practice.
Mm-hmm.
If you simply apply yourself and try different things, you will know, you will feel it in your heart and your soul when the door is opening for you, when the light is green. And that's when we found a practice to stick to regularly and for as far as it'll take us.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as it takes us, are you saying that it's possible that you go one route, one path, as you call them, path of sacred devotion, or and then down the line you say, you know, I really need to change path because I'm being led to, let's say you were in sacred movement and now you feel like you need to do the path of meditation.
Exactly.
And it's just the way you're growing within yourself and your spirituality.
Yes, I do believe that. You know, I talk about 12 practices or paths in the book, and they break down into four categories: physically oriented, emotionally oriented, mentally or intellectually oriented, and then what I call soulfully oriented or soul-centered. And I think that a lot of people have a predisposition. You might call it a spiritual personality, and they tend to be oriented to one of these four areas more than another. However, after a period of time, you know, we all change and we all grow. And whether it's moving from one practice of the mind to another or into a whole other category, most of us at some point will find that our practice needs to either have something added or maybe we need to go in a whole new direction. A great example is a yoga teacher came to me recently for some guidance, and he'd been teaching yoga for years, and he's very well respected. He has a following, you know, a book, the whole deal. But he said, you know, he's at a point where he almost feels like the depth is running out for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean that there isn't more depth in yoga. Of course, every practice has infinite depth. But for him, at this stage, he was having a hard time finding what challenged him. So I asked him, you know, well, is there anything else you've ever been curious about? Is there anything else you've ever wanted to study but never gave yourself time to explore? And interestingly, you know, he said that his life had been immersed in Eastern teachings, but he always had a curiosity about shamanic cultures and Native American traditions,
mm-hmm.
an interest for ritual and ceremony. He wondered if maybe it related to his growing up Catholic. And so here was this doorway for him to actually create intentional ceremony in his life on a daily basis. And he did. He took the challenge and he found this whole new experience, including lots of judgments and places where he was stuck as he started to engage this new practice. Because,
mm-hmm.
of course, the old practice he was a master at. So it didn't show his limits anymore. And changing vehicles, changing practices, helped him to see himself anew.
Now, with this, is it, and I'm just putting this out there for the audience, is it all right to be, like, mixing things up from all of them?
That's a very good question. And my answer is yes and no. So
right.
The way I would answer it is this. In anything we do when it comes to spiritual growth, I think integrity is always important. And when I say integrity, this kind of applies in two ways. So one, if you're taught a practice that has a particular protocol, like a technique,
mm-hmm.
if you really want to experience the depth of that technique, I believe it's important to honor the actual process you've been given rather than immediately customizing it, modifying
right.
it. I mean, it's always going to be modified a bit as individuals, but too often I hear people say, well, I went and I took this class in, you know,
right.
whether it was Bible study or meditation or yoga, and I liked some of it, but I'm just going to cut out other parts. Well, part of the thing that they're missing, and this kind of funny comes back to our red light, green light thing, is
right.
what they're focusing on is just the parts of the practice they like. But sometimes what they're missing is that their greatest opportunity for self-knowledge and healing actually lies in the parts of the practice they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I always say, you know, be careful before you start modifying stuff too much or mixing bits of this and that, because there's an integrity to to things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, it's wonderful to have multiple practices.
Mm-hmm.
So that might mean that maybe you do, you know, I'll give kind of a Christian example. Maybe you've learned a Buddhist meditation technique that you do in the mornings, but you're still involved in your church and you go to church on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But you enjoy the way yoga brings peace into your mind and your body. So maybe 3 days a week you do yoga. So there you have a community practice, church.
Mm-hmm.
You have a physical practice, yoga. And then you have a practice of the mind that you do in the mornings every day. And there's, I see absolutely nothing wrong with that, as long as you do the best you can with each, and when appropriate, seek guidance and mentoring.
Yes, and I guess consistency really is important with any spiritual practice. Is just consistency. And
yeah,
what I mean by that is, I know a lot of people that they'll do it 1 week, and then, no, I'm not going to do anything next week. And then they say, well, I really should the next week. And it's really connecting to whatever path that really fits you and being, like you said, in integrity and keeping, honoring that you've chosen, or in some ways, I think, have chosen you.
Yeah, yeah.
To guide you in the direction of the sacred.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I think, again, there's this balance between letting ourselves have permission to search,
mm-hmm.
to not feel embarrassed to be a bit of a spiritual window shopper, in the sense that, okay, so maybe we try one workshop, or maybe we go to a Hay House convention and then we try different things. But as long as we complement that kind of taste testing with commitment and
right.
what you call consistency. And if something feels right, apply ourselves.
Right.
You know, I'd also add for people listening that I don't necessarily believe that it's always helpful to wait for the perfect practice. In fact, I tell a story in the book about a woman who came to see me after one of my talks, and she was, you know, almost in tears and said, you know, she had been searching for years and years and years, and she had read everything you can imagine, and she'd actually done a couple of degrees relating to spirituality. And I said to her, well, what spiritual practice has helped you the most? And she said, well, that's the thing, I can't find the perfect one. I've tried everything, but none of them, you know, I haven't applied myself to any of them because none of them are perfect. And I pointed out, you know, if you wait for the perfect practice, you might wait for the rest of your life. Sometimes it's enough to find something that's good enough, that seems to be making a difference,
mm-hmm.
helping you progress right now. Give it your best and see where it takes you. And then usually you'll have a new perspective down the road and you can refine. But I think it's like that with a lot of things in life. We wait for the perfect job, the perfect time to have a difficult conversation in a relationship, the perfect time to start losing weight, the perfect time to
mm-hmm.
ask for help. You know, sometimes we need to start with the best we have right now and then learn from the feedback of life.
Now, with all that you've studied, and you've studied many, many years, you must have found a lot of commonalities through all the different things.
Yeah, you know what I can tell you? What I've noticed is that, of course, there's no question, language can be very different. Cultural trappings and costumes
mm-hmm.
can be very different. Our buildings, very different. Our structure for our communities can be very different. But then when we start to look at what people are actually doing in these spiritual communities, in these religious communities, that's when we see that there actually aren't that many practices out there. Now, I've come up with 12. You could argue there's 10 or 14. But 12 seemed like the right number for me. And I really came upon that by seeing that when I was looking for what's new out there, I was finding it was just new versions of what's always been out there. So we find that there is this consistency of human expression in our traditions, And in one area, it's in our practices. But the other area that's so fascinating, and I'm sure this is an area that you've delved into quite a bit, is when we look at the mystics,
mm-hmm.
the people in spiritual traditions who say that they have directly encountered the divine, their accounts are so similar, in some cases almost identical,
mm-hmm.
across cultures and around the world, whether it's the Buddha or a Christian mystic or a Hindu saint, we find that the direct experience of the sacred is radically, radically similar around the world, which really leads even the most logical people to say that what we are contacting must be real.
Yes, and you definitely know when you've been in contact with the sacred. For me, I always get tears in my eyes because of the joy, the immense joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Same for me, actually.
And it's just so intense and beautiful. My heart just opens up.
Mm.
And there's no doubt in my mind that I'm being very blessed at that moment, and I'm always very, very grateful. So,
can I interject
sure.
there? You know, what I loved about what you just shared is that sometimes people don't understand if a practice is about evoking an experience like peace or love or the qualities you just described, how does that experience in that isolated setting, whether it's synagogue or mosque or the mm-hmm. Zen center, well, how does that have anything to do with life? Like, isn't that kind of escapism? But I think it's anything but that if we
mm-hmm.
understand spirituality in a healthy way. Because if, for example, a person took the qualities that you just described in that experience and then applied them in daily life, the feeling of connection, the feeling of inspiration, the feeling of joy and gratitude, well, of course that would change their life.
I definitely have a deeper appreciation of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I look out my window and I say, how blessed am I?
Mm. Yes, I mean, even to be here you are with a radio show,
yes.
helping people, you know, it's all such a gift. And yet, my struggle in my work has been, you can only tell people so much.
Mm-hmm.
We need to seek the experiences, because that's when we change, you know. I believe that's when people change most radically.
Yes. Now, do you think, like, the classes and, like, the Hay House conventions, when I go there, the energy is awesome.
Yeah.
You definitely get almost like a spiritual high when you go to this conference because there's so much great energy there. Do you feel that a lot of people are just going there to get that energy, to try and get motivated and inspired to move forward, and then they get home, and I've talked to a few people that they said, and then it's like, what happened?
Yeah, it is difficult. And, you know, where I work at Canyon Ranch, in some
right.
ways it's not dissimilar. You know, Hay House events have a spiritual high. Canyon Ranch has a kind of high that people leave with as well, this
mm-hmm.
healthy living, vital life kind of experience. And, you know, I think maybe there's two things that come to mind for me. One is that I really encourage people, when they're in the high, if we want to call it that,
right.
to try to be reflective, journal during the process, dialogue during the process. Ask yourself, how will I take this home? Because one of the, you know, slippery slopes is that we're having so much fun, sometimes for some of us when we're exploring spiritual practices, traditions, and philosophies, we're just enjoying the moment.
Right.
You know, we all here be in the moment, but you know, the future is also pretty important. So there's a balance. What's your intention when you go home? What are you committed to applying? What are you committed to doing? Because I find if you don't leave a setting that inspires you with a kind of clear vision,
mm-hmm.
maybe even a practical plan, the environment that most of us live in will not help us to remember or restore that feeling. And that's really the other point I wanted to get to, which is, you know, I remember a long time ago, in fact, I was just a teenager, and I was reading a book called the Dhammapada, and it's a collection of Buddhist teachings. They say teachings of the Buddha. And one of the first things that he wrote about was, if you find yourself in the company, traveling, in the company of people who are not going in the same direction of you, then in time you need to wish them well
mm-hmm.
and part company. Because if you're going in different directions, why would you stay with people in a band or in a group?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think that what we find in our lives today is maybe in, for a desire for community or connection or validation, a lot of us find ourselves in communities of people who really aren't going the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
We're having lunch with people at work that don't share our views. We have old family friends that we still do things with, and they don't uplift us. We sometimes even have friends that are always focused on the negative. And much as I believe we need to honor and respect the people that have been a part of our life, when people seek to create the kinds of changes that you and I are talking about, it's a hard reality, but changing your environment, changing your circle of human support is often critical. And so, for some people, it's the only thing that helps them to sustain what they get from things like a hay house or a radio
mm-hmm.
show or a weekend retreat.
Well, don't you also find, I have found, because many times I will have to say, it's been really nice knowing you, I wish you well, and just kind of part ways. And that's when they go, wait a minute, you've got something for me. Now I understand what you're talking about. You can't leave. But in reality, they just want to hold on to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's actually I think that's a very important thing you just said, which if I can emphasize it for
mm-hmm.
people, very often when people, and this goes beyond spirituality, we see this in cycles of codependency.
Right.
We see this in cycles of addiction. When one person gets well and starts to leave the system, we will almost always find that someone in the imbalanced system will try to draw you back in. And believe me, I've been there, and
mm-hmm.
they push all your buttons, and the good buttons, right? They say
right.
the right things, and they need you, and they love you, and they finally understand why you're done with them. And then we tune into the heart and the intuition. Rarely, but sometimes the heart will say, no, stay. This is something that will grow and change.
Mm-hmm.
But most often, there's a little voice inside you yelling, run!
Yes!
Run for your
do
life!
Do not look back! It's okay!
Yeah. But, you know, the old wounds and the ego and these other
mm-hmm.
things, very hard to resist. Well, maybe we'll give them another try, another chance. And then sometimes it's years later.
Right. Right. And I'm seeing that a little bit more often now, that people are just staying because they're so afraid to break away. They're afraid of hurting somebody's feelings. They're afraid of what will happen if they say no.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you something that I've come to really believe about that, and I touch on this a bit in the book in the second chapter, although I elaborate on this a little more in my workshops. I think it has a lot to do with what I would call identification.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, what I mean is that even if something is unhealthy or unwell, or out of balance in our life, if it has been a part of our life for a long time, very often we come to identify with it.
Right.
And by that I mean we've almost energetically and intellectually integrated this situation
mm-hmm.
as self. It's me. And the very idea of losing it feels like a death. And so a lot of times when people say to me, why is it so hard for me to do the right thing? Why is it so hard for me to let go of what I know I need to let go of? I remind them, it's supposed to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be uncomfortable at first. And if you just know that and be patient and trust your decision, you'll get through it. There's an old saying, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Yes.
But too often, without a good word of advice or a community of support, we start getting down that hall. It starts looking dark, and then we doubt ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that kind of the harder way to go? Keep coming to that wall of fear. Keep going back. Keep coming to the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Is at this point in my life, it just sounds exhausting.
It really is, and I keep, you know, if I keep hitting that same wall, it's like, okay, what wisdom am I missing here?
Yeah.
But just be really clear, because I know it's time to get past this. Let's face it, be clear, crisp, in my face, let's move on.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, even with people, I always say to my clients that if somebody irritates you, take a good look at what irritates, what they're irritating you about, because that might be a part of you that you just don't want to look at.
Yeah.
But once you do, it's okay to leave.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
It's just recognizing, yes, that's a part of me. I'll deal with it and move on. Because there's lessons in every single person you meet. There's always mirrors, in my view, in everyone you meet. In some way, it could be good. It could be you meet someone, and they're in a place that you were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you just recognize, wow, I've come a long way. And then you just keep moving. Unless they're in a place that they really need your help and they really are willing to do the work. And are you finding a lot of people want you to just fix them?
yeah. I guess that's a short answer. I think a lot of people are looking for someone with the answers. And, you know, if you want to sell books and if you want to be popular, it certainly is tempting to tell people you've got an answer, you've got a solution. But I, in my heart, it doesn't feel genuine, because what I know in my heart is that they have the answer.
Right.
And that the only thing I can do is journey with them, reflect things back for them, create a safe, loving context for them to self-discover or explore.
Right.
So if someone says, can you help me? Well, I'd like to think, maybe. I'll try. I'll do my best. But if someone says, do you have the answer? You know, the only one who's got the answer is the self. You know, it's the person asking the question. And in fact, you know, that's another kind of element of the book, which is, people ask me, what's the best spiritual practice? Is there a best spiritual practice? And I say, of course there's a best spiritual practice. Oh, what is it? What is it? Tell me, I'll sign up right now. Well, the best spiritual practice is the one that works for you right now.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were going to give me the answer.
Right.
But the answer.
I can make a suggestion, but with that suggestion, it's best you look within your heart and see if it resonates with you. If it does, then investigate it.
True. Because I think anytime someone finds truth in what you say or what I say, they aren't really learning something new.
Mm-mm.
They're remembering or awakening to something within.
Yes. And I'm just one of these people that absolutely loves the journey.
Mm.
I don't mind the stops, the red lights, per se, because to me, it's the time I really grow and really understand me, and it makes me connect even deeper to source, to the sacred, because I know the answer's in there. And the reasons why I've got that red light is in my heart and in the sacred. So it makes me go more inward, even deeper than before.
And what I think you're bringing up here is this idea of what I would call lived faith. You know, there's a complexity to that word faith, because a lot of people think of blind faith,
mm-hmm.
like just trusting something because someone tells you you should, or out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I've never been a fan of that kind of faith myself, but I do believe there's such a thing as a lived faith, like we have through experience, we develop a kind of trust in the universe, in the process, in the divine, and it's through that trust that we become courageous in these difficult times, and sometimes, as you're saying, even excited, because we know that when it gets difficult, when it gets interesting, we're going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the faith that if we just honor the process and keep going, there's even more joy, even more love, even more abundance on the other side. But, you know, I think for most people, it takes a little while to get there.
Yes, I've been on this road a long time.
Uh-huh.
Ever since I was a kid, I've been on this journey, and I didn't even realize I was on the journey till now that I look back, it's like I've always been doing it.
Yeah.
I've always been studying, I've always been searching, I've always been connecting, and it's been interesting to just kind of reflect on where I've been and where I am now, and it's been kind of bizarre, but I wouldn't change one second of it.
Yeah.
And I think you have, you know, you've been on the journey a long time. You even start the book saying at 18 years old, you said, I'm going out on almost like a quest.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, in the introduction, what I talk about is that really it probably started for me, you know, when I was just a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it starts for everyone as a child. And then when I was about 10, I remember it becoming, when I say it, my own experience of, let's say, the sacred or a divine presence in life. I remember it becoming more, I don't want to say extreme, but pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where when I, for example, went out into nature, I felt that I was going out into more than just nature. There was this
mm-hmm.
intuitive sense that there was a mystery, an energy behind the physical world that was speaking to me and connecting with me. And then as that grew, when I was about, I guess about 13, you know, you go through some changes physically
mm-hmm.
and in school. And what struck me was that my friends were not interested in the same things. I was asking questions and responding to these experiences in my own life. And they were, you know, they wanted to go try their first beer or go on their first date. And that's when I think that the conscious external search began, where I started to wonder, am I crazy? Am I going to be alone all my life? And so I started reading. You know, my first teachers were books.
Mm-hmm.
And then from books, I felt I needed to connect with teachers. And then ultimately, you know, very naively as a kid, I realized, hey, these ancient traditions, they're, you know, they got it right. Because, you know, I'm saying it as if, like, I know and, oh, what do you know? The ancient Hindu scriptures, they're not so bad after all.
Right.
But really what I was realizing was that the spiritual truths in our traditions ultimately transcend culture and time. And then that's probably where the shift occurred to want to share it. To say, hey, not only am I not crazy, but this relationship to the sacred, the intangible, to God, this is not only something real in the world, but it makes a real difference. And if you walk that journey in a healthy way, it can heal your life, and it can heal the life of others. So, you know, I think that's how the transition happened for me.
And with that transition, did you find that at one time you felt you were very alone? Did you tend to find like-minded people suddenly appearing out of nowhere? Or did you have some time that you truly were just with your books?
You know, I was blessed because I did have one friend who, from the age of probably 13 to 16, was kind of a little bit of a lifeline. Now, he maybe I was a little more engrossed in this sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you might say, than him. But he was a friend who accepted me unconditionally. He loved to talk philosophically, and it was enough. The fact that I felt like a total misfit with the rest of the people I knew, even though, frankly, I was popular and, you know, people liked me,
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I fit. I think having one friend was enough, and otherwise it was really books
mm-hmm.
and isolated studies that got me through. However, once I started reaching out and looking for teachers or people who would share, you know, it didn't always work out, but something worked out, and someone always showed up. And I feel like ever since, if I open my heart and if I go out into the world and look for something, ask for something, it does show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that a lot of people listening, you know, probably already know that their perception follows whatever they're focused on. You know, perception follows focus. And that means that if you're hungry when you go to the mall, instead of finding the birthday gift you're looking for, you find all the snack places.
Right.
You know, and if you are going out to eat, but you know the next day it's someone's birthday, well, then the opposite is true, right? Everywhere you go, you think, well, maybe I could get them this, or maybe this is a good gift certificate.
Right.
So in a similar way, if we put our intention on like-minded people, teachers, opportunities, and so on, it's almost as if not only do we change our perception, but I do believe we also change the energy of our being, and we become, we send a signal, in a sense, that like-minded people will recognize. There's a mirroring that happens.
Yes.
And you mentioned, like, the Hay House conferences. That's one of the most fantastic things that happens at a big event like that, is that people are just magically attracted to each other. Oh, they'll say, you know, I've seen you in a few sessions, and I always, you know, I thought you might look like a neat person to connect with, and here we are at the same, you know, jewelry booth, and oh my gosh, we know the same people, and I've been reading this book too.
Right.
This is all these connections and synchronicities, but you need to tune in.
Right.
You need to be willing. You need to be present. And not focused on finding evidence for all the negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking for that, we already know, you'll find lots of that too.
Oh, very easily these days.
Yeah.
It's almost too easy. You don't have to focus too much. It's just right there.
Yeah.
But the Hay House, I actually connected with a friend 3 years ago. And we're still in touch. And she's also has a connection with Hay House. She's one of their, she's in one of their books. It's one of the contributing authors. So another connection to Hay House.
Mm-hmm.
So with all these, and they are coming up more often, the conventions and all the classes, and they're doing it teleconference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just had a teleconference workshop on the 12th, correct?
Yes, that was not a Hay House one.
Right.
I did have a teleconference. And then, oh, gosh, it's on my website, but in February I have what they call a webinar.
Right.
Which is sort of more like a workshop online and live that people can participate in. And, yes, I mean, Hay House is doing great things. We have Hay House Radio as well.
Right.
Actually, in February, I'm really excited because I have a four-part show that's going to happen once a week for 4 weeks, and I'm going to be with Cheryl Richardson and Joan Borisenko. And that's going to be really exciting for people to check out because
yeah.
It's like a dialogue between the three of us.
And their programs are always very informative and very insightful, and those two women have done so much.
Mm-hmm.
To really open things up. You've got a lot of things going on. I mean,
well,
you've got a book signing coming up in February in San Francisco.
Yeah.
New York, L.A., Denver. I mean, that's all coming up. You have, in March, you're doing, what are you doing with the Infini Foundation
the
in Chicago?
Yeah, that's a really great group in Chicago, if any of your listeners are from that area. They're doing a really incredible job at being a venue that brings a high caliber of teachers and speakers of all kinds of spiritual backgrounds and paths. There's really something for everyone, and I'll be doing a two-day workshop there, actually doing it with my wife. My wife and I often teach together. We're teaching at Omega together this summer as well, so that's really exciting.
Excellent. Now, you also, you've got a lot of things going on with Hay House. You have something I guess that's the Omega class that you're doing in January, 21st through the 25th?
Oh.
Or is that on the radio?
That is actually the live period in which I'm recording the radio sessions with Joan and Cheryl. So we record them live. We're recording them live at Canyon Ranch in Massachusetts. So people can come and see the actual event, and then we'll do like signings and discussion after the recordings. And then it actually gets played back to the broad audience in February. So that's what you see there. And then with Hay House, it's the teleseminar or webinar, and and of course the big conference in May, which is just a lot of fun for people.
It is a lot of fun. And at the conference in San Diego in May, they also have Wayne Dyer. And I just watched his film last night, Ambition to Meaning, and that's a really wonderful film. I highly recommend people seeing that.
Oh, good.
You also, coming up very soon in February, you have a new series of CDs coming out.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. So there's a wonderful company for people out there who want to get into more audio programs if they don't have time to read, but they have lots of time in the car or commuting. It's called Sounds True. And Sounds True is kind of a leader in the personal growth audio programming. And I have, I can't even believe this, but it's an 8-CD set. It's called an audio learning program, and it's called Your Spiritual Personality, Finding the Right Spiritual Practice for You. So it's actually a complement to the book, but there's no duplicate information, or generally speaking, no duplicate information. And what it kind of does is it takes the book, sort of the next step to become more practical and take home.
Okay.
Kind of the bridge from the book to your life, or you you could do them in any order. They're designed to stand alone, but they're also designed to go well together. And that was a lot of fun to do. That's a real great company. And there's some I do talk about the 12 master paths in a different way in the audio program, but there's also very different material in there about spiritual personality and how do you discern what your spiritual personality is, so you can pick the right practice.
Now, is The Return to Sacred going to be an audio book, or is it now?
I do not know. It's not now, but
okay.
I'm
telling it's going to be then, because I just see it being audio as well. So you'll be recording your book really soon.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your intuitive feedback. It means a lot to me. And you know, something I want to say about your intuition, for the people that are listening, is it sounds like something so metaphysical to a lot of people, trust your intuition. But you are such a wonderful example of someone who lives it, who understands that intuition isn't just something that happens occasionally. It's a way of being in the world. And it's as much a way of making decisions as sight and sound and taste and touch and information gathering. It is information gathering. And I can only encourage people to try to learn more about that. And I just think you're a great example for people.
Oh, but thank you. To me, my intuition And that connection is like breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I cannot separate myself from it. And frankly, I think that when you really commit yourself to it, it really does move from a time in your life where maybe you doubt it or you're just getting
right.
used to it, to a place where you actually cannot think without it. You can't interface with the world without it. It's just part of the way you filter and experience all things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is remarkably helpful.
Oh, it definitely is. It definitely is. And once you get in the flow and really trust it, and it's really truly a part of you, and you have that connection, I couldn't imagine my life without it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to connect it up with the book a little bit, one of the things that I like to share with people is that when they make a commitment to their own spiritual evolution, when they make a commitment to their own spiritual path, a lot of things will shift and change and evolve with time. And one of the things is that, you know, it's like Aldous Huxley said, the doorways of perception are opened. And it's not just about those mystical moments when we see things clearly or we experience a divine connection. I actually believe it's also on a daily basis that we awaken intuition
mm-hmm.
as we grow spiritually. It's just kind of a natural, beautiful byproduct. And, if we're open to it. And so, again, when we talk about committing to a practice or learning of the different practices that are out there, this is anything but fantasy. You know, this is anything but impractical. For someone like yourself, for someone like myself, this is the most practical thing that I've got in my life.
Mm-hmm. It truly is. And with your CD and this book, a lot of people are going to be more in tune to the possibilities of really finding that right practice. Because a lot of times, there's a lot of people, like you said earlier, in they're not sure what's right, and they are looking for that perfect one. I myself, I have to admit, I dabbled in all of them.
Oh, absolutely, because that's how you found what worked for you, right?
Right, and I actually had fun, and it's just like I did Reiki, and I've done Buddhist, but I've been studying all the philosophies all my life, and I didn't even realize what I was really doing, because I'm doing this when I was a kid, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
I'm studying Buddhism, and I didn't even realize what
yeah.
I was really reading. I just went to the library and said, oh, I need this book.
That's great. Well, and certainly it was very much the same for me in the sense that, of course, to be able to write a book about 12 paths from around the world,
right.
there had to be some dabbling, there had to be some taste testing. And I think that, you know, something that was coming to me while you were talking that feels important to share with people listening is that there is a kind of a balanced middle ground that I feel a lot of people crave but have not yet found. And what it stands between is the extremes of the maybe fundamentalist voice, particularly in religion, that says, it's one way or no way.
Right.
And then the other extreme of the scientific voice that is also fundamentalist and says, if we can't measure it, it's not real.
Right.
But the reality is, while those two groups are very noisy and we hear from them a lot, I think most people know that the truth lies in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there is something intangible in this world, and it isn't easy to quantify or measure, and yet we crave the permission to come into relationship. We crave the permission to explore and to try some different things until we find the right path, and not to feel self-judging or, for that matter, even wrong for doing so. It takes time, and it's a process. But it begins with giving ourselves permission.
Yes. And with that, it's a great way of ending the show. So I thank you very much, Dr. Jonathan Ellaby, for joining us. And please check out his website, returntothesacred.com, where you can pick up his book. There is a link on the air page on bbsradio.com to his website and also to the book, which is awesome. I highly recommend getting it. And check on his website all the wonderful things he's doing on his calendar, because he is definitely someone to meet and learn from. Amazing man. I am really honored to make your acquaintance and share Tucson with you when you're in town.
Yeah. Well, the pleasure's mine, and I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Yes, very soon. With that, this is Jennifer Hellman of AngelsIntuition.com saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Many blessings and good night.